Welcome to the Matt Haycock Show, a podcast about business, money, and life. Matt has been making money and making mistakes for over 20 years. And in this podcast, he shares his thoughts and stories so you can improve your business, finances, and life, whilst hopefully avoiding the mistakes he and others have made along the way. Listen in and level up.
And the growth of delivery services is booming right now. So we were like, okay, let's start with a kitchen. Let's use my auntie's kitchen and let's create a little brand for Deliveroo.
So this was literally in auntie's kitchen.
Yeah.
On Deliveroo. Hey guys, it's Matt Haycox here and welcome to another episode of the Matt Haycox Show. And today I've got with me a multi-talented guest. He's a singer, he's a YouTuber, he's an influencer, he's a businessman. He's been seen online over 33 million times. I'm going to stop bigging him up there because I can see him smiling and his head growing already.
It was a bit of when you said singer. I think like, yeah. Well, yeah, the singing part is not my strongest, but
You sing better than me and you sing online. Well, so we'll call you a singer.
Thank you.
But anyway, welcome.
Thank you so much. Yeah, thank you for having me. I love it. I love this room as well. It feels pretty, you know, old Hollywood here.
It's quite funky, isn't it?
Yeah, really cool. Really cool.
Well, listen, I guess obviously I've given you a brief intro, and although we, you know, are jovial about it, I mean, it is true, you know, you've got many skills, you know, you showcase them all on YouTube. And I guess how did it all begin for you? You know, why did you wake up and think I'm going to start sharing my content online?
So I always loved drama as a kid. I used to be in all the school plays and everything like that. I actually played I played Augustus Gloop in Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. It's like a big kid. And I always loved that kind of route. And then I kind of got away from it. I went away to school and then went to uni. And then as I was getting a little bit older, I was working as a nightclub promoter in central town. And me and my best friend were doing it. And we were going out quite a lot. And then he started doing YouTube. And we kind of just made videos together. So we'd go out. And obviously our schedules were, we would go out 3 times a week. Didn't do too much in the day. But we started to film these YouTube videos. We were doing kind of the worst stuff. Like, I say the worst kind of stuff. But like now, when you look back on it, it was like kind of trying American candy, all of those like typical like YouTube challenges.
But what? Why did you start? I mean, why did you say, you know what, buddy? Let's film a YouTube video.
Well, he started. My best friend. So he was on. Is a guy called Jack Maynard. He was on I'm a Celebrity. Yeah. So he started doing videos, and I was just a guest in them. So I appeared in them, and we started to get like, you know, we're two best friends. So we started to, you know, get a following, and I started to go up on Instagram just from being in these videos we would film in our bedroom. And then they started getting like 1 million, 2 million views, 3 million views. And it was kind of like, wow, this is crazy. I think I went up like to like 50,000 when I was followers on Instagram just from these videos. And it was kind of like, we actually started to like develop like a fan base and everything. And I used to get loads of comments being like, you got to start a YouTube channel. But obviously I didn't want to just start and just do the same kind of videos as my friend did and what we were doing before. I wanted to do more, because as I said, I used to do drama as a kid. I wanted to do more kind of comedy sketches and things. And like I'm a big fan of The Office and Brent and everything like that. So I created a character on YouTube in my early videos where it was, I wanted to be a YouTuber. And I really, you know, I loved all this social media. I loved all the thing, but I wasn't very good at it. So we created these comedy sketches, and then I fell in love back doing that. We did loads. We did a few, I think we did like 12 in total, but they do like quite big productions. They spend all day. We did one we were filming with like Italia Conti Theatre School. So we did one there. We went there, went back to my old school and filmed one. It was all just playing this character. And then in that, I did sort of more vlogs and things like that. So yeah, I mean, that's how I kind of just fell into it. But obviously I had that love for it, and then to create something different, I guess, to what my friends were doing and everything like that. That's what kind of made me gain my own following.
And were you looking at the time just to, I guess, just to express yourself, just to create content and enjoy yourself? Or do you think there was ever, you know, a longer term strategy there of growing an audience that you could monetize and make a career out of this?
Yeah, well, at the time, it was kind of all new. So this is like 4 or 5 years ago now. So it was all very, very new. And I always wanted to go in the restaurant industry. I always wanted to have my own restaurants and my own food businesses and everything. And my dad's in the casino industry. So I've always wanted to kind of do something with him. And then this sort of came about, and it was kind of a completely different world. And I was seeing, you know, all these YouTubers and everything like that. And, you know, it was very, very profitable back then. You know, you're doing these big brand deals, you're working with really, really cool brands and everything like that. So you kind of, when you start it, you don't think, oh, it's going to be a career at all. You're just doing it because it's fun. And it's a case of you're seeing other people do these videos. You think, oh, you can do them. You're messing around with your friends. And it gives you that opportunity to travel. It gives you the opportunity to, you know, go to cool events, go to work with really cool brands and everything like that. So for me, it was kind of, I didn't have any strategy at first. And then obviously I'm business minded. So I was thinking, okay, what brands can I launch off the back of this? And, you know, how do I develop my career from being a YouTuber, then going into actually, you know, I want to be a credible businessman and you know, and have this, you know, empire that hopefully I can create. So I think for me, that strategy wasn't there at first. I never thought about, you know, I'm going to make money from this at all. I literally just thought, okay, let's start making videos when we're hungover. They started getting views. You know, there was like, we got quite a lot of like young, like fans and everything like that. So that was fun. Just going in the street and like people, like, oh my God, it's from YouTube and everything like that. So it just kind of like snowballed quite rapidly. And then, yes, there was no big strategy at first. And then the brand deals start to come. So then you're like, okay, you're starting to make money. And then you're like, okay, this is a career. So I went full time with it like 6 months after I kind of started. Once you start getting consistently like high views.
Well, so let me just take a pause there just to ask, I guess, a couple of questions to give both, let's say, a reality check and some inspiration or confidence to the people watching and listening to this. Because I think, and you know, I can talk about this from personal experience as well, obviously on much lower numbers than yours, but you know, the logic still applies that, you know, unless you're remarkably lucky for whatever reason, you know, when you first start creating content, there's two things that are going to be true. You know, no one's going to watch your videos.
Yeah.
And your first video is going to be worse than your second, and your 10th video is going to be better than your 5th.
Yes.
And if there's one word that we can, you know, give people that you have to apply this, otherwise don't even start, you know, it's consistency.
And I agree,
you've got to have the consistency and the, the fortitude to sit through and put the effort into creating a video that's going to get one like and one view, and still turn up again tomorrow to do another one. Now, I know there's, you know, plenty of stories out there of you know, some young guy who shares a music video. It's the first video he's ever done, and you know, he gets 20 million. But what was your journey? I mean, like I said, I know mine personally was, you know, I'd be putting out. I didn't want to create content for a long time because I'd find every excuse not to do it because I'd think that I was worried about my mates taking the piss, worried about the negative comments, whatever. So, and then you get past that and you start it and you put the first video up. And you think, oh, I didn't get any negative comments. I didn't get any negative ones because I didn't get any.
yeah, of course.
and then you know, the second day is easier than the first, the third day. And you know, I'm now 2 years into this. And,
yeah.
You know, obviously nothing like your kind of numbers, but you know, they do consistently grow week on week. And all I can say is, if I hadn't done the first 18 months, there wouldn't have been the last 6 months. But you've just got to blast through it. I mean, what were your numbers back in the day?
Well, I was lucky because obviously I had this platform first, and you know, I was. Okay. And I would say my biggest advice. Don't do it unless you love creating videos, because you will get found out, you know. And if you do it for, because obviously now, you know, you see a lot of reality stars and things like that, they go into YouTube, and I get so many people asking me like, oh, how do you just transition for YouTube? And they do a couple of videos, they don't get any views, and they give up because they didn't love it. And the ones who make consistently big careers out of it, if you look at the likes like Logan Paul, Joe Sugg, you know, those guys, the leaders, and they've made millions. I'm talking about multi-millions, some of them. And especially like Logan Paul and everything, they were creating content when they were younger. So they were doing the kind of, they were performers at school, or they would love media. They loved, you know, performing. They loved being out there, loved being in front of camera. And if you don't love it, don't do it. If you just do it for the paycheck and you read, oh my God, you know, Zoella's buying this house or whatever, you're never going to get anywhere unless you get a freak bit of luck and you're the best looking person in the world. Then, you know, maybe you'll have a career with it. But all the early YouTubers and all the ones, they've been doing it for years. And I was very lucky because obviously all my friends did it. So we did it as a group. And, you know, we would always, we'd be in each other's videos. Every day there'd be a video on YouTube which would feature one of us in. So you kind of like, you would always appear on YouTube and it was that consistency. But you've just got to love what you do, and you've just got to love creating videos, and even if just talking.
And I think if we take some business analogies and crossovers from this, I mean, it's very much like you say about creating the content for the love.
Yeah.
And doing it whether or not you get paid, because if you don't love it, then you're not going to be doing it consistently enough and long enough. And most of the time when I talk to people, it's not giving advice. It's not obviously about people who want to be YouTubers, to be famous YouTubers, but it's people who do understand that they need to be on social in some way, shape or form, whether it's having a podcast, whether it's being on YouTube or creating content on Insta. And the question they always ask me is, what content should I be creating? And I always say, well, I can't answer that. I can't answer that for you. You know, you've got to, you know your business better than me, but most importantly, you've got to create content that you love and believe in.
Yeah, of course.
Because you, otherwise, you're going to have nothing to talk about tomorrow and the day after. And even if you have got something to talk about, you're not going to want to be there.
Yeah.
And I guess it's fine. I guess it's putting the content before the money and deciding what would I still be happy talking about in 2 years' time if I've not earned a penny from this.
Yeah, no, of course. I totally agree. I totally agree. Because, yeah, you just know the sort of person that you would do well, you know, and they have to. It's a hard grind, especially now. When we did it in 3 or 4 years ago, you know, there wasn't as many people doing it. Now everyone goes, oh, okay, I've got a business, or I've got a brand, or I've got, you know, I want to build my social stuff. How do I get this? How do I become a, you know, social media influencer? Because they know that these big influencers, they push more product than anyone, you know, like James Charles and people like that, who are the top influencers, and the Kardashians almost, you know, they push product through their social media, and they get the huge numbers. But these guys are, you know, they've grown up wanting to be the center of attention. They've grown up wanting to create content. They've grown up, you know, wanting to be on kind of TV and stuff. And you've got to kind of want to do it rather than just go, okay, I want the money.
And I think what people miss as well, though, is, you know, they say, "What? Oh, I want to be an influencer." Listen, the influencers are influencers with or without YouTube, with or without, you know,
yeah.
As in you're an influencer as a person. As often, you know, people, I'll be, you know, some of my mates talk to me just about the industry, and they say, oh, you know, "Don't you think it's crazy that there was no such thing as an influencer before?"
Yeah.
And you know, it's something that's come over the last 2 or 3 years. I'm like, well, "What are you talking about? You know, there's been influencers since the beginning of time. You know, whether that's when we were 18 years old 20 years ago, and the nightclub we went to was the one that our lead guy took us to, or the, you know, the guy that all the girls followed, or the, you know, the guy who bought the pair of jeans that you all wanted, those same jeans. There's always been influencers. You know, social media and the internet has just given a way to scale and extrapolate and do it. So I guess, and it all just keeps going back to you've got to do something that you love, believing, and passionate about, and are prepared to put the graft into.
Yeah, of course. No, I totally agree. And it's like, what would this is what I say when everyone says, like, oh, okay, well, I want to be a YouTuber, I want to create a YouTube channel. It's like, what would you watch? What would you love watching? And that's what you should create, because it's like, you are your, you know, I don't like it when people, like, you know, change online and everything like that. But if they think of it like, okay, what would I watch in terms of a daily vlog? And again, what would I like to see? Someone my age, what would I like to see on YouTube? And that's what we're trying to create now, is like, my audience are older, but it's like, what would I like to see? Then I start making a love in, you know, making that content again. And it's just that's the main goal with it.
I think as well, I don't know if you'd agree, but I think it's important as well that when you say, what content would you like to see? Don't worry about how niche you think that content is.
The more niche, the better.
Well, yeah, the more niche, the better, because you can target. But also, even if you think that's a micro niche, because when you went to school, you were the only one that liked, or when you lived in Leeds, you were one of only 5 people that did it. Because of the nature of the internet, you know, the YouTube, etc., you know, the entire world can see what you're doing, and you will undoubtedly find 10, 20, 50, 100,000 people who are as mental as you,
and like that
really niche down thing. So, you know, just, you know, do what it is that you love.
Yeah, of course. And you see now, like, you know, for example, like, sort of show jumping. And if someone loves show jumping and they create content on show jumping, there's such a market for that. And I know someone who owns a showground. He was talking about these YouTubers now, and there's such a good market for that. And these YouTubers creating that kind of content.
Show jumping is in horse show.
Yeah, horse show jumping. And it's like, this is just because it's quite niche, but there's a big audience for it. And then you can work with, say, or like, for example, food content or vegan content or whatever. There is a big market for that, so that you can target your, you know, because you're creating these food content, or say you're doing snack of the week. You know that food brands are going to want to be featured in that snack of the week if you already have a following. So it's like, how do we target them? How do we become brand friendly? How do we, you know, work with these brands? What sort of content can I create which brands would want to get involved with? And therefore, that will ultimately be like, okay, Mikey's doing snack of the week or whatever on his Instagram. How do we, okay, it's getting 10,000 views, but all foodies who like to know about the snack of the week, okay, we can pay up for our product to be featured and everything like that. So it's about creating as well, like, that whole, like, your own thing, you're in your own lane, and you know, more brands would be more susceptible to work with you if you have that niche, I think, anyway.
I guess we'll move on in a second. Just one last question I'd like to ask, just based on something you said a minute ago. Is you said that you and Jack used to look back at some of the early videos, and you said we made the worst content.
we still do.
but do you look? I suppose the question for me is really more about giving people the confidence that everyone looks back at their old videos and thinks, "What the fuck was that?" You know, I mean, yeah. have you seen that as time's gone on? You know, you've got better. You know, you're a better performer or front of camera.
Oh my God.
The quality of your videos are better.
There's literally, yeah. But like for us, obviously, because we had this kind of, you know, following already, I look back and there was a video that I did on my channel and it got like 800,000 views. And I was like, I watch it now. It was like a best friend tag. And we literally asked him questions about each other. It's about being best friend. It's the worst video. Like I'm there like sweating. I'm bright red. I'm not like looking at the camera. I'm obviously so nervous because it's like one of the first videos on my channel. But it's like, you look back now and you think, oh my God. But then you look at the comments and like, people actually like it because you're being you. Rather than if you see someone who's like, you know, so polished and overly polished and, you know, unrelatable, then they it's often, you know, some people, they might not relate to it. But whereas because we were just young, because we were like, you know, relatable and everything like that, and people would, you know, see themselves, I guess, in us, that helped us build the platform now. And I guess I look back on it and I'm like, oh my God, you know, what was I doing? I like all these stupid challenges. But I don't look back and be like, I want to delete them. I look back and laugh at them because it was like, okay, well, that's given me that platform to now do what I want to do. And, you know, I'm not afraid to say that we did loads of stupid videos and everything like that when we were younger. But it's just a kind of, you know, evolution of social media. And, you know, you have to, we did it because the audience liked it then. And now we evolve and move on. And you can't look back. You have to always kind of look forward. And you're only as good as your last video.
So you say that obviously, you know, these videos have therefore created the platform that's allowed you to do what you want to do. So let's segue that into talking about your new vegan or plant-based business. I mean, is that something that you had kind of passion for, you know, prior to YouTube days or during your YouTube days? Or is that something that was almost like completely unrelated, but I guess, you know, the platform you've created for yourself has allowed you to do that?
Yeah, so with me, I've always wanted to create my own food product. I've always wanted to have a restaurant. My end game is to have a, you know, multiple or restaurant concepts and things like that. But I've always wanted to have a food product. And I would always take girls. I think I would say my ideal date would be, I was my dream, you know, would be to go on a date with a girl and we go to the cinema. And one of my sweets or product were in the cinema, that type of thing you buy as a snack and you go into like Waitrose and you have your own product. And I've always wanted to have that product. So I was coming
so
up.
So romantic.
Yeah, I know, literally, yeah. Like my date to Sainsbury's to buy my pack of crisps or something. But that was always in my head. I was like, oh, it'd be so cool. And so I came up with an idea when I was doing YouTube called Mikey's Milkshakes, and it flopped completely. It never took off. Like, you know, it never went off the ground and we didn't spend too much money in it, but it just never got anywhere. And then I started doing these sweet subscription boxes. So people would order what kind of sweets did. Then we sold some good numbers of those, but that kind of, we don't really do it too much now. And then I was in making my own product, and then COVID hit. So we were like, okay, this is a nightmare. Basically the product, we were going to get them shipped from abroad and that kind of all stalled and everything like that. So that's very much on hold, that side. So I went down in lockdown. I went down to Brighton in lockdown and I sort of said, well, my YouTube career, you know, I'm not really that passionate about it now. I don't really have I love to make content if I've got a content to create. You know, now obviously we create a lot of content and, you know, we're starting Clean TV and everything like that, but I don't really have anything to push. I don't really have a set like content plan. I don't know where I want to go with YouTube. My product that I'm creating is pretty much being blown out of the water by coronavirus. And I'm thinking, I'm going to either sit here in lockdown and feel sorry for myself, or I'm going to create something with my best friend that we're proud of. So I started on a health journey and started to get fit. And he's a restaurateur, my friend. His dad owns a couple of restaurants. And since he was 16, he's ran them. So we were like, okay, right, let's think of a brand. And we kind of wanted to do, I was eating a lot more vegan food. He starts to eat more plant-based food as well. We were like, okay, let's go for a clean kitchen. So we came up with this brand and we were like, okay, well, everything's, you can only order food on Deliveroo, and the growth of delivery services is booming right now. So we were like, okay, let's start with a kitchen. Let's use my auntie's kitchen and let's create a little brand for Deliveroo. We do vegan burgers, we do vegan fast food and kind of healthier fast food.
But I guess just so we understand the distribution chain and for anyone listening to this, you know, who wants to, who's got you know, a passion to start a food business and thinks that they need to go all out with big budgets.
No.
So this was literally in Auntie's kitchen.
Yeah.
On delivery.
Dark kitchen.
Yeah.
And it was, okay, so we were like, right, so we'll create the brand, get some nice pictures done, obviously, because of social media and everything. So took some nice pictures. We bought some bags. That was our biggest expense. We bought some branded bags. We're like, we've got to brand the bag out. And then we just chucked it on. We got a chef in who worked for his restaurant, my friend's restaurant, you know, pretty cheap chef. And we just launched it one day. First day was slow. We did I think 10 orders. And then the next day, I don't know what happened. We kind of got it in. I obviously had a bit of a social media push. So I pushed it hard and we suddenly got into an algorithm on Deliveroo and just started nailing orders. And it was just like, my friend's got this video where we opened up at 5 and about 10 past 5, it just went and the orders just pulled out and he pulled up this receipt and we only had one chef on, obviously. And then this other kid who was like, we're just gonna help with the bags. And he was like, boys, you put me in the shit here. And it was just so many orders going through. And then obviously since then we were like, okay, there's a demand for it. And then we worked with a better chef to create the product even better. We started developing it. And then consistently we were doing good orders and we were being number one on Deliveroo. So we were the top selling burger on Deliveroo in the Brighton catchment area. We did this really good chicken satay burger. And then, so we were like, okay, this is a brand. And then we took a little site on Brighton Seafront for the summer. And it's obviously Eat Out, Help Out helped. And then, so we launched that and that started, queues and things like that. You know, people were coming down and some people traveling from Kent to try our burgers and everything, which is great. And then we opened our second dark kitchen in Chelsea, which is a proper kitchen now.
Do you still have Auntie's kitchen in Brighton?
No. We moved to a proper kitchen now.
Do you supply out of the restaurant that you also have as the shop front, or do you have?
So we have now. We're launching our shop front in Tunbridge Wells on Saturday. We have a dark kitchen in a delivery only kitchen in Brighton, only kitchen in Chelsea. Just taking a site of Box Park as well, which is Box Park. We're spending quite a lot of money to do it up. Really cool Box Park Wembley. That will be delivery and shop front. And Tunbridge's delivery and shop front as well. And then we're just looking at a site in Manchester as well to do another dark kitchen there and Brixton. So it's all kind of go at the moment.
Awesome.
But basically we did it on the fact that, so Brighton started to do well. Okay, we were like, right, we made some good money in Brighton. Okay, let's open Chelsea. Chelsea starts to do well. Okay, we're opening another one. And we've kind of just done it like that.
And have you been able to grow these organically? Have you brought investors in? Have you funded it from your previous career?
I put a little bit of money in from my YouTube to start it all off. And obviously we put a little bit more money into Open Box Parks. We're spending 10 grand on the unit. So the unit will look really nice with all these lights and light boxes and everything to stand out. But yeah, we kind of did it more organically so that we hit sales, hit to a certain amount. Eat Out, Help Out helped a lot because obviously we managed to get some good money from that. And then we just opened the venues. And I think that everyone now, delivery is such an important part of a business. And I think businesses need to think of Deliveroo and Uber Eats as partners rather than just add-ons to the restaurant. And I'm confident now if I open a restaurant, well, I say obviously post-COVID, I think the plan is to do hard with the delivery kitchens and then start opening physical sites.
Well, this is a debate I have with small restaurateurs all the time where they're always always resenting the fees paid to Deliveroo and the fees paid to Uber Eats. And I like the word how you say, you've got to see them as a partner.
Yeah.
Because for me, all the traffic you'd get delivered from Deliveroo or from Uber Eats, most of those are people who would not have come.
Yeah,
come to you anyway.
Yeah.
You might have your shop in Brighton or your box tree or whatever it's called, but the people who are going to go in there are going to go in there. The people who are going to use Deliveroo want to use Deliveroo. And I think it's a very naive comment for restaurateurs to say, oh, well, we're going to do the delivery ourselves and save the 25% delivery of Deliveroo. Don't look at it as a delivery fee. Look at it as a franchise fee, a marketing fee, all of those wrapped into one.
But that's the thing, because obviously my best friend has restaurants and he was like, bro, we have two staff on in a small kitchen. And that's all we need. So we don't have to pay the rent. So we don't have to pay the massive staff costs. We don't have to pay the fit out costs. We just go into kitchens. And I think that with that allows us to obviously not worry about the Deliveroo fees because we see Deliveroo as a vital part of the business. And I think that's what we're trying to do. If we can build up, say, the reason why we opened Chelsea and we want to do Clapham is I want to get sites there because if I can build up that solidly, that delivery base, and we know that we're hitting, 300 orders on delivery, 400 orders a week, then that will cover the whole rent on a lovely site in Chelsea. So I'm confident to go, okay, I can build up, say I can get, you know, investment, or I can get, you know, build up debt with banks to open a site so I don't lose percent. So it'll be a case of I'm consistently making profit from these dark kitchens. I said to the banks, look, here's my profit. I'll take out a loan with them, pay, obviously here I can pay off the debt repayments from this profitable business. And then everything I make, I start opening sites like that. But obviously it's quite a nice time because now, I say nice, it's horrible, but in terms of for us, it's like, there's going to be some good deals in the next 6 months.
100.
And there's going to be
some mega deals out there now.
So we can get kitchens now and then get a really good deal and then open next summer. And I think in the history of like pandemics and things, they don't often last 2 years. You know, even Chris Whitty came out yesterday and said, this is a 6 month thing. And it's not going to be, you know, they've got to get through winter. And then I think, you know, everything's going to start to open back up again. There's vaccines, there's stronger treatments. I believe in the science, we'll be able to eradicate coronavirus by next summer. So we just want to put ourselves into a position where our brand's big on social. We have a keen like delivery base and we don't spend too much. We don't spend too much on fit outs or rentals or anything like that to have that, you know, from next summer, we will hit it hard and, you know, try and compete with the likes of Veggie Pret and those boys.
And I think the thing for me as well, the interesting part of this all as well is, you know, we can theorise all day long about, you know, like, is it going to last 6 months, 3 months, 12 months?
Yeah.
You know, or what are the after effects going to be? To a degree, it's irrelevant because what you've proven is that in the last 6 or 7 or 8 months, you can still create a business in Corona. Mm. You can grow that business during the pandemic. And if we come out of it in 6 or 7 months' time, then happy days. It can only go up. But you've already proved that that the fact that we're in a pandemic, you know, does not need to be a financial disaster for all. And and there's ways, you know, there's workarounds, i.e., delivery.
Yeah.
And there is opportunity in the face of adversity.
Yeah. Yeah. Of course. And I think we've capitalized on that. You know, we as I said, we don't want to be. We are a plant-based business, and we are doing that because of the health reasons towards plant based and the environment. So, you know, plant-based food is better for the environment for you. Say for example, our chicken nuggets, they are better for you than normal chicken nuggets. Our wraps are better for you and than, you know, the meat.
When you say chicken nuggets, are they non-meat chicken nuggets?
Non-meat chicken nuggets, yeah. But if you put them into like MyFitnessPal, your statistics are so much higher, you know, on the normal chicken nuggets. So it's like, what we want to do is we want to kind of, we're not saying to anyone, become vegan.
What about, you know, a chicken knotted? There you go. I'll give you that as a brand.
What's that?
Chicken Knot It.
Yeah, but that could. There we go. Yeah, that could be one. There we go.
I've thrown you off your flow now, haven't I?
The brand that we use, This Isn't Chicken, they're quite good. So they're called This. They're This Isn't Chicken. They're This Isn't Bacon. They're a really, really good supplier for bacon and chicken. You have to call it chicken. It's like chicken with an N rather than chicken.
Because everything Marks and Spencer's is chicken. It's like C-H-I-C-K apostrophe N.
So it's chicken. I keep saying that now. I keep saying, oh, should we go for some chicken or whatever? Like, I'm like, okay, I can't say that. But like, we don't want to hammer down to be like, become vegan. It's just, we want to be like, okay, it's accessible. It tastes just as good. Like, our burgers do taste just as good as normal burgers. We're releasing a new chicken truffle mayo burger. And I mean, oh, I crave it so much. I'm really hungry now, actually. I'm going to have one after. But with that, we're saying, look, you know, this stuff can taste just as good as normal stuff. If you can have one of your, say you have two takeaways a week, one of them's plant-based, you're doing your bit and you're it's better for the environment, it is, and it's better for you rather than just, you know, hammering McDonald's or anything like that. So we want it to be for maybe gateway vegans. So they're not just, you know, total vegans, but they're just, maybe it's an introduction, it's accessible, it's like, okay, I'll try that. And maybe I'll come vegan, maybe I won't, maybe I'll limit my meat consumption. And that's where we want to kind of go with the brand. We don't want to be too radical. We want to be mainstream. And yeah, we don't want to just throw it on, put people's, like, through people's mouths going, become vegan. It's like, no, well, try this, just try it, or try, you know, a little bit and have your introduction to it.
And so from a marketing perspective, do you think the fact that you already had a following has delivered you traffic, or do you think that the lessons you've learned building a brand and marketing yourself as Mikey Pierce, a YouTuber, has taught you transferable skill sets that have then allowed you to market this business?
I think so. I don't think I drive sales. Because obviously, for example, you have to be in a certain catchment area of Deliveroo. You have to, you know, you have to have a very, very engaged audience to drive, to come to, you know, and I'll get one or two sales. If I put a swipe up, I'll get a couple of sales through on Deliveroo, but I don't get many. Mm-hmm. But I think that it does help because obviously I've got a little bit of a following, so I can draw. I think from doing YouTube, there's all algorithms in these delivery services. So YouTube has an algorithm, and the way your video gets picked up is it's like the engagement, the share quality, you know, the thumbnail, the title, all this is kind of algorithm. And if it's people start to view it, it will start to move up and become recommended. And my friend of mine, Connor Maynard, he does these covers and they get millions of views. But he's so smart with the algorithms that he'll release it when, you know, the music video for the actual song comes out because it's a cover. He'll like tag it as the same kind of thing. He just knows how to work the algorithm. And I think because obviously we've learned that through doing YouTube, Deliveroo has and Uber Eats have the similar sort of algorithms. So, for example, we look to drive traffic to Deliveroo. We look to drive reviews and engagement on Deliveroo. So therefore, ultimately, they start to push us up and we're in a lot of their search engines. So when people go on just scrolling down, they will probably see Clean Kitchen because of the kind of, I can push that a little bit through my audience, but also I have an understanding of how to kind of manipulate the algorithm. Not saying manipulate, but how to work the algorithm in our favor to be in the burger category, to be in the vegan category, to be in the healthy foods category, to be in the breakfast category, to be kind of hitting all the categories. So that's given me, and then also I can PR it. So for example, the reason why we did quite well in Brighton is because I use that kind of YouTube profile to PR the hell out of it. I did every single magazine, however bad it was or whatever, you know, maybe had like 10 viewers, but I was like, okay, I'll do that magazine. I spent like weeks just ringing up people and like saying, okay, I'm launching this new brand, like I can talk about this. And I just was like, just PR'd the hell out of this. I was in, there's a local paper called The Argus. I think I was in that like every week leading up to launch, just like, okay, oh, they're doing this and they're doing that. I feel that the importance of PR is so important. And even if you don't have the money to do it, we have a PR agent now, but we didn't at first. So we literally, I was just doing it myself. So I was just, okay, oh, we're going to launch this burger. You know, do you want to talk about it? Oh, you know, I did this video. I can maybe, you know, can I go and talk about it? And I think that value is so much bigger as well, because more and more people, a different audience are seeing it. Okay, great. Whack out socials, of course. Focus very heavily on socials, but don't discard those little local magazines or those local like businesses, because they have engaged audience who go, oh, I'll try that. Or they're, you know, the Argus has quite an older readership, but they're all the mums read it. So they tell their kids and they're like, oh, I know him from YouTube or whatever. So I think that's the main benefit I have for it. And I love, if you look at like the American businessmen as well, I watch like a lot of, you know, American businessmen and stuff, and they all love PR and like whoever they're with and everything like that, they're just PRing their business. I'm not wearing it today, but whenever I'm usually in the gym, I wear like a Clean Kitchen like t-shirt and everything like that, or wherever I'm with anyone, all I talk about is Clean Kitchen, because I know, because it might lead to something. Or if I'm with, you know, YouTubers or influencers or anything, I just drum, oh, you know, have you tried this Clean, have you tried this, and like, oh god, then post this or whatever. And it's just, yeah, it has to kind of take over your life, I guess. But if you've got that passion for it, then all you want to talk about it is your business, and it might drive some people mad, but it's like, yeah, I just think it's so important to have that PR edge or arm to it.
But yeah, it's good you mentioned passion as well, because I was going to say, for me, the thing that's really shone through in this chat is your absolute passion for everything we've talked about, you know, for the content that you've created, you know, for the YouTube, I guess, you know, for the people you do it with, and then ultimately for the vegan kitchen. And I guess, you know, it's a big takeaway for my audience about, you know, the importance of loving what you do.
Yeah, of course.
Enjoying it and persevering through.
Well, my best, well, a very good friend of mine, have you heard of an app called Cameo?
Yes.
They are killing it. They've got everyone. They've got Snoop Dogg, everything. And one of my best friends, he founded it. And it was, so he came to us when we were doing YouTube and we were hitting views back in the day, me and all the boys. Like, we were getting like, you know, good views. He pitched to us this idea and he was like, look, I've got this idea basically where you send people buy video messages from you and everything like that. And you can go on the app, and none of us liked it. We were saying, hey, it won't work in the UK. No, it won't work in the UK. I don't think it's going to work. And he offered some of our friends to invest in it and everything like that. Now he persisted on it. All he is talking about is Cameo, Cameo, Cameo. He's driving us mad almost, but you can just see that love for it. And he'll be at Soho House at dinner, but he'll see a celebrity. He'll be up there, whoever it is, he'll be up there. He saw like someone who played Ron Weasley's love interest in Harry Potter 4 or something like that. I had like five lines, and he's up there going, oh, here's my card, like, oh, Cameo. He paid for their drinks, but he signed her up. And he's so immersed in the business. And now it's valued at, I think it's up there in the hundreds of millions. I don't know if it's hit a billion valuation yet, but it got valued at 300 million last year and they've had a massive boom.
I know it's got some massive names on there.
Snoop Dogg, I think Ellen's on it. They've got like Sylvester Stallone. He always sends us videos of people from Only Fools and Horses because we used to watch that, like shouting our business out and everything. But he's just got the hustle and the passion to, he'll say no to hundreds of people. Say, loads of people say no to him, but he still goes because he just loves the brand and he believes in the brand and it just shone through. And everyone says it when they see him. It's Martin. He all he just thrust down your throat is Cameo, but he just loves it. And he's fun to be around because you can see in his mind, like, this is where you want to be in, say, 5 years' time. And you want to have that, like, element of it. And I guess you've got to love what you do and you've got to believe when you're trying to sell a brand. You've got to believe in it. You actually have to believe in it because there's so many bullshitters out there that be like, you know, I'll do this or do that, you know, or you can do this and stuff. But you're just like, oh, I just hear this all the time. When you've got someone who actually has got this backstory about why they love the brand and why they're doing it. And, you know, he's got this amazing, it's almost like it's the best, I say it's the best sales pitch in the world. He pulls off everything like from his like childhood and the reason why he's doing it. But you actually believe it and you're like, okay, I believe in that. And that's what I really try and learn from him as well, because he's great.
So, and where's this passion gonna see us watch Mikey in the future? What's the next 2, 5, 10 years gonna do for you or show us?
I think like I've got an ego thing to open a restaurant now, and like I've had like some conversations about opening restaurants and things like that in the next 6 months. But I really want to grow this clean brand to be. We want to release a supermarket line of vegan, healthy vegan desserts. We want to and then obviously we want to dominate, you know, major cities in terms of having dark kitchens, and then watch ones performing the best, and then we open kind of physical sites and start. I want to start coming after veggie prep. A little bit chomping away at their market because I love Pret, I love the brand and everything like that. But they've launched this veggie Pret, which is vegan kind of bakery. But we want to have the concept we want with clean is you know kind of a Journal of the Juice esque concept. We do really cool smoothies, but we cook our burgers and then but it's grab and go. Yeah, we do this, we do fast, like, you know, quick wraps, quick sandwiches, juices, that kind of grab and go element. So yeah, we just want to kind of dominate with clean. For a little bit, for a few years, build it up so it is that kind of household accessible vegan option. And then I want to go into, you know, mainstream restaurants and open big concepts with my best friend, obviously, who my business partner, who does all the boring stuff. So he does all the operations. So he's like, he works 72 hours a week. He reckons around 72 hours a week, and just everything to do with the kitchens, the insurances, the staffing, he does everything, all the kind of stuff that like I'm not the best at, he does. And he's just no ego or anything like that. He's just happy to sit in the background and happy just to work hard. And he just loves it as well. That's the goal anyway. But obviously create content as well. We want to open Clean TV and start hitting good views on that as well. But we'll see.
Awesome. Well, I'm excited to watch your journey.
Thank you.
Like I say, you know, your passion's been exciting and infectious.
No, thank you for having me. Thank you.
And I guess not that you can give Clean Kitchen a shout out any more than you already have done.
Clean Kitchen.
But before you go, just tell the guys at home who don't already know you where they can find you, where they can find Clean Kitchen.
Our delivery radius is all around Chelsea, Clapham, Fulham, Hammersmith, Shepherd's Bush, around that kind of area. We're also opening in a Brixton site, so it'll be Brixton, Aylesford, all that kind of area. Then Brighton, delivers to the whole of Brighton. Tunbridge Wells, we launch on Saturday, so make sure you're there on Saturday or ordering from us on Saturday. And then Box Park in Wembley. Box Park's really cool, so our delivery, Brent Cross, everywhere like that. So if you're in those areas, make sure you order clean. It's really good.
Perfect. Well, thanks a lot again, Mikey. Guys, I hope you enjoyed listening to that as much as I enjoyed talking to Mikey. As I said to him, his passion was infectious and inspiring, and I hope it's inspired you guys to go and start following some of your dreams at home. If you like the video, make sure you press like. If you don't already subscribe, listen to the podcast on the audio version, iTunes, Spotify, find us on YouTube, wherever you haven't got me, go and find me somewhere else, and I look forward to seeing you again soon.
Thank you for listening to the Matt Haycock Show. For more Matt, check out his YouTube channel. That's youtube.com/MattHaycocks. Or go stalk him on Instagram and Twitter, the Matt Haycocks. And we'll see you soon.